CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Yes, it's Thursday. It is already. We're halfway through August, which is. Some people say that mentally what happens to us is because we have a gestation period of 9 months, humans just automatically get very, very tired somewhere around the nine-month line. I don't know whether that's true or not. That's a theory that was thrown at me about 6 weeks ago, and I thought, let's find a way to drop that into the conversation and see whether anybody can substantiate it.
Well, surely it's 9 months after you're born, though.
Yeah, you would think.
So and if you're born in July, you've got no excuse of being a deadbeat in August.
Right, so that's a good point. But I do think winter has a terrible effect on people, and I also am sure that the current strains on the economy are a big part of the problem. I think a lot of people are feeling huge financial pressure at the moment, and that doesn't help either. Anyway, we're here to make you feel a little bit better, and we're going to try to improve your Thursday morning and make your day a little bit nicer. Isn't that cool?
Speaking of strains in economy, Cyril said, well, in 14 days we'll investigate this petrol price thing, whatever, whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
So this whole new yawn thing, it's like...
Yeah, and I see that the Marikana report has been released and that it's devastating and it says, you know, there are a lot of people here who ought to... What's the bet no one's going to be held responsible?
Of course not.
You know, we've actually got dead bodies. It's like Life Estimen. Remember that? We've moved on so quickly from Life Estimen, remember?
Lest we forget.
Now, that was one of the most hideous abuses of government power. And who's been brought to book? Where is Gadani Mahlangu? Huh? Where is she?
Back in duties?
I don't know what she's doing, but it seems that no one's locking her up or going after her or suing her personally. I mean, the families obviously don't have the means to do this. Why is it that you and I, as ordinary citizens, can't get away with not paying Eskom 1 month because our electricity will be cut off? There are consequences, direct, immediate consequences for all of us, right?
Mm. Yep.
If Sia doesn't, for example, pay his municipal rates and taxes, they will come after him immediately, within the day. I mean, if you don't pay Telkom, your phone's cut off.
Mm.
If you don't pay Discovery or whoever your health provider is, you are not covered if something happens to you. They won't cover you. They say, sorry, you didn't pay this month. Now, if Gadani Mahlangu, in the dereliction of duty as the MEC for Gauteng Health, under her aegis and watch, and with her consent, a number of patients are moved from one facility to one which cannot accommodate or look after their needs. And they die. Not just one or two people, by the way. Over 100 people die. And she doesn't even get... Like, they don't cut off her lights. They don't repossess her car that the government are paying for, that we are paying for as taxpayers. Nothing happens. She goes and sits in front of a hearing, and she's very cross that they ask her all these questions because she says, these are her words, I'm only the political head. That in her mind there's some kind of...
That's that invisibility cloak, isn't it?
That's right. It's a special immunity. It's like, you have the immunity idol in Survivor. And then you can't be voted off the island because you get the immunity idol. Like, no, I'm a politician. Secret powers.
The power of a politician.
And suddenly she doesn't have to worry.
Well, she
How come that doesn't happen to us, ordinary humans?
She was re-elected into the Provincial Executive Committee after Life Estimen as well. So talk about repercussions.
I mean,
she got re-employed.
How evil does your organization have to be when it rewards a murderous person? It doesn't just punish her, which it hasn't managed to do. It doesn't just see that the families are given an explanation, which supposedly was done under Dikgang Moseneke, although I'm sure that those families are still asking questions and they'll never get answers to some of
those questions.
Well,
they all got R1 million, didn't they?
Yeah, they got paid off, basically, which is the way you deal with people when you don't respect the person. You deal with the symptom, you don't deal with the disease. The disease is that the ANC does not respect the people of South Africa. They don't. They don't care about you and me, and they certainly don't care about the poor, the people who vote for them. Because they go, well, we've used that as a mechanism for us to get into power. Now that we've got it, who cares? And if they do make a noise, we'll just do just enough to shut them up. Like, give those families of those people who died, just give them $1 million. They'll never get $1 million in their lives. They're poor. Just give them $1 million. They'll shut up. And it works because they have no respect for the person, the family. They don't care about those people. What they're interested in is just making the problem go away. $1 million, let's thumbsuck how much money, because we've got this, you know, bottomless pit of money. That's how they think anyway in government, because we could just keep taxing people. Let's give them $1 million each. Okay, that should shut them up. Yeah, good. That'll make the memory of the lost one go away. It's just so awful. And here she is. She's still swanning around, this Mahlangu. Like, she's untouchable. And then we've got Cyril, who is in some way, shape, or form responsible for what happened at Marikana. Whether he tried to politically influence things against the unions, because he was a shareholder in that company. I mean, you talk about, you know, bad capitalism. He is the illustration of what bad capitalism is. And that's the least that could have happened. Like, that's the low end of what he might have been responsible for, is getting on the phone and just slightly leaning on the police to say, do not let these striking workers hold us to ransom, and do not let them get violent, because if they get violent, you take the initiative. I mean, maybe that's all he did. And by his own admission in front of that commission, he may have made a call to one or two people. If that's the least he did, he's still a very evil capitalist. And I don't like saying that, because capitalism's been getting a huge beating from people who don't understand it. But you're a pretty nasty person if you put profit before people in every situation, no matter what your system of economy is. And communism's done just as much, if not more, that is evil, because they do social engineering. But Cyril did that, and what's happened? Nothing. He's president of the country. Jacob Zuma had the gall to hand this entire country, Footstuarts, to the Guptas. Are there any Guptas in prison?
Don't think so. No.
Are there any Zumas in prison?
No.
Are there ministers that were under Jacob Zuma that have been fired from cabinet because they were useless? Not a one of those questions.
There's been a few fired for being not useless, as in like...
They've been fired because they're not useful to Cyril.
Yes.
That's the only reason they've gone. And this is how cynical our political system is in this country. Now, I love to imagine a world, and maybe I'm very naive, but I love to imagine a world where people are at very least able to ascertain, by looking around them, what's good for them and what isn't. And I don't want to get into that debate, which can get slightly racist, about how people who vote ANC are voting against their interests. You know what I mean when I say it can get slightly racist, because you get a lot of white people and superior black people who say, oh, well, you know, the stupid poor. Mm-hmm. And I think that's patronizing, and that's very dangerous, and it's not necessarily helpful to the argument. But if you are voting against your interests, let's just talk about that for a second. If you are a person who's voting for the ANC, if you allow the ANC to keep people like Mduduzi Manana and Redani Mahlangu and Suprahumapelo and people who are obviously bad, who've obviously done bad things, they've been convicted in public fora, whether it's a court or a commission of inquiry or anything else. They've been fired from their jobs, supposedly, or they've resigned from their jobs, but they're still there. They're still in the ANC. They're still getting a paycheck. That would be like you rob the stationery cupboard at work every week. You rob it blind. You steal everything in the stationery cupboard, but your boss keeps you. And you're not doing anything useful. So it's not like you're just robbing the stationery cupboard, but you really bring in the most sales. you're not. You understand there is no performance indicator here. Now, either we're all really, really stupid in South Africa, because maybe we know that this is going on, and but we're powerless to do anything about it because politicians...
Gareth, we've had this conversation before. We're not stupid, but what can we do?
No, I think we are stupid, and maybe
I really don't think so.
Say that?
But like, what is it that we can do?
All right, the Guptas are a family of pretty sly operators from India. They don't really know the country well, but they knew one thing. These people are easy to hoodwink.
Yeah, of course.
That's what they knew. So they came in here. They loaded up their wheelbarrows with all the gold, and they drove them out. And we all sat around on our hands going, oh, racism, white people, black people, the land. What's wrong with us? Like, we're dumb. Maybe we deserve to be taken advantage of. You know how you see someone going into a casino every day, and you think, that's dumb.
Until they get their own wake-up call.
Well, they end up broke, which is where we're at. You go into the casino every day. You know the casino wins. That's why there are casinos. No one would open a casino if it kept losing. That's called a charity. No, I mean, if you take in money from people, but you give out more than you take, you're essentially an NGO or a charity or something. You're not a business. A business has to make a profit.
You're a municipality.
Well, in this country, yeah, there are those definitions. But you don't really feel sorry for the gambler who keeps on throwing his money into a machine, right? You don't. You eventually go, wow, what a dumb gambler. This guy's got to, you know, put the money into savings. But we were ripped off by the Guptas, and we've never managed to figure out what it was that made us such an obvious target. These guys were from elsewhere. They weren't in the country. They weren't part of the fabric of society. They weren't in the ANC. The ANC doesn't have anyone clever enough to have pulled a Gupta on us. They don't. But maybe we are dumb. Instead of trying to blame everybody, because this is a very South African thing too, there's always someone else to blame. Like, let's look ourselves in the mirror and go, how capable are we of picking up on a threat? Or how gullible are we to believe people's bullshit that we'll hand over the whole country to a family that come in to essentially raid? That's what they did. They came in to raid the place, and they raided it very well. Do you think the Guptas are living in misery and squalor now?
Sure.
You think they're ever worried about being chased down by the authorities? Never.
Well, they're really probably patting themselves on the back.
Yes, and they've done very well. Now, that, as criminal as it is much cleverer than anything, anyone, any captain of industry in South Africa, the Reserve Bank governor, the Minister of Finance, everybody always talks about these smart people in South Africa. Well, you've all been duped. So actually, no, there isn't a smart enough person in this country. Atul Gupta's cleverer than you. In the hierarchy of clever, Atul Gupta and his brothers are at the top. And we're bottom feeders. And maybe we just got to look at that in the mirror and say, okay, well, how do we improve ourselves? It's no good for us to wallow in this. Like, how do we get better? What kind of stuff are we going to start doing now that's going to propel us forward rather than make us victims again? And that's where we can start making some serious progress. But we've got to start being personally responsible. And this ties back in to the whole discussion that started this. The Marikana report, sure, it's going to be full of all kinds of things. Some people must be held responsible. We've got to show that we as South Africans take very seriously our personal accountability. That means if you drop a piece of litter and I see you, I should be able to do something about that. I should tell you to pick it up, and if you don't pick it up, I should be able to have you arrested or have some kind of consequence fall onto you. We need to be responsible for ourselves, and if we can't be responsible for ourselves, we need to start implementing some system where people are forced to be held to account. And the first people to do that have to be the politicians. Because if you can do a mahlangu on innocent people, vulnerable people, and get away with it, that just tells the whole of society, well, it's always someone else's fault. I'm not responsible. And then we never get anywhere.
But this all comes back to leadership, right? So who's going to be the authority that implements these things? Because the politicians aren't going to be...
That's not how it works. Because that's how it's always worked in history, but it doesn't work like that anymore.
Yeah, but okay, so who holds this...
There isn't a magic person who's going to pitch up out of the clouds and go,
change one thing.
We've been looking for Mandela since he died. We've been looking for this new Jesus.
I get that, but
there isn't one.
So, but who is going to hold the politicians to account? As in, like,
we have to. But and the first way we have
what
to,
jurisdiction do we have? What authority
well,
do we have?
Well, we have our votes. We have the courts. We have various public fora and NGOs and places like this where we can express our opinion and put pressure on these guys.
Okay.
But we have to, all of us, make our voices heard and not be afraid to say what we really think.
So are you saying we're doing good by being here this morning?
Hell yeah. Okay, no, good. Sure. And if you're listening to this and you're part of this podcast and you're conscientizing yourself to the fact that there is a way for us to improve stuff, which I do believe there is, you're not just giving up on yourself or on the country or on everybody else in the country, because there are a lot of people who feel that they must give up now because it's just, you know, there's no way to change things. Well, that's also a sense of personal irresponsibility, so to speak. You can keep your house in order. Mm. You can make sure that you tidy up where you live. You can make sure that you don't beat your children, that you don't shit where you eat. You know, these are very basic things. I mean, we were talking yesterday about how the government's got this really ambitious plan to get pit toilets out of the way by 2030. And that shows you what the low level.
Is that because they're busy until 2028?
No, they've got no. They don't. They're pretty much by saying that, they're admitting we can do nothing. We are useless. We're going to need 12 years to get shitting right. So don't start relying on us. And that's exactly the right message. Ironically, don't rely on these guys. And apply pressure wherever you can. See how there are ways for you to pay as little as possible for electricity, as little as possible for water, pay as little as possible tax. Make sure that you are as responsible a human being as you can be with what you put into the system. Put nothing dirty in. Do no dodgy business. If you know someone who's got a government tender and they are ripping off the government because the person who's signed off on the tender is an idiot and this person thinks they're really clever by ripping the government off, they're not ripping the government off. They're ripping you off. Report them. Like, we can all tidy up our lives with the people immediately around us. If you know someone who is doing something dodgy with the police or with government or with a State Department, report them. Like, these are little things. We always look at it and we expect someone to come and make it all okay. They're not going to.
Yeah, like the Mariah Carey song. But you're right. It's about having the small things by ourselves.
You can get out there. You can. And I know nobody's going to be like a Willy Hofmeyer or a, what's that, Paul O'Sullivan. Go around and like have people arrested and shit. But if you do know someone who's in government who owns some little business on the side that they're giving themselves business and their family's business, you've got to report these guys. You've got to whistleblow them. Because whistleblow on them, I suppose, is the right term. Because otherwise, how's it going to get better? You think that's cool? Maybe they even give you some of that money. But you're losing way more than you're gaining. Because you're going to have to put back in to keep them going. You understand? Mm-hmm. It's a rotten system. So everywhere you see anything like that, you've got to do something about it. We've got to make it so difficult for evil and wicked people like Mahlangu and Manana and all of these other crooks that we know. We know who they are. We've got to make it difficult for them to live their lives in a society that won't tolerate that. Like, where you walk around and people boo you. And they throw fruit at you. And they make the society unbearable for these people. Because people just like, why should we put up with like the worst of us? When we're all trying so hard. We're trying to raise our families. We're all trying to pay our bond. We're all trying to pay for our food and our clothes and basic stuff. We're not living these extravagant lives and driving around in blue light brigades and flying to foreign countries. And, you know, this is where we can fix things. And it's tiny, tiny little things. Start by finding out who your municipal manager is. And find out who your councillor is in your area. And actually become an activist in that respect. I mean, I'm by no means the example here. But I think if we don't start changing things at that level, it's never going to get better. No big savior is going to come. Cyril could be... he could be Jesus. He really could. He could come in here and he could have the ability to levitate over the ground, and he could have the ability to make water into wine. It wouldn't make a scrap of difference. I promise you, it would not make a scrap of difference. Because the problem is us. That's why we were hoodwinked by the Guptas. It's why we allow Mahlangu to get away with life estimeni. It's why we live in a country where we're a little bit more than slightly frustrated a lot of the time. Because we tolerate that shit. So stop it. Stop today. And it can be done. You can do it immediately. Just decide, I'm going to live. These are my rules. These are my values. I'm going to do this. If I encounter somebody who's crooked, and they say to me, hey, if you do this, then you can get 10% of the crooked money. Say no. You are going to make it worse for yourself if you say yes. Because all of this stuff is eventually going to come crashing down. It's going to have to. Once we start developing technological means to make corruption difficult or even impossible one day, and it's just around the corner. It's not going to happen in 20 years' time. It's going to happen now in the next 5 to 10 years before the toilet situation gets sorted. So let's start sorting it out, okay? Please. It's little things. Let's tidy up. Let's just sweep it in front of our houses. Let's make it look pretty and not have plastic bags flying around. Not leave used condoms lying on the fence. You know
it's
what I mean?
It's not too much to ask.
It's really not. It's not, because it's about self-respect. Like, you don't want to live in filth. You don't want to be a squalid human being. And it's got nothing to do with how much money you have. You could be dirt poor. I know poor people have more dignity than the filthiest rich person in the world. It's all about self-respect.
But
if you don't respect yourself enough, then you look at politicians who have money and power, and you respect them because you think, well, if I could just be like them, maybe I'd have some self-respect. You're not going to. Self-respect is your decision, and it's now. Anyway, God, I really said we were going to cheer you up this morning. Look at me. It's true, though, right?
I mean, you're offering perspective.
I get so annoyed. And we look at, a broken-down car on the side of the road, and we're like, well, that's because that person doesn't take care of their car. And, of course, some people don't have money, some people don't have the resources, but it's your asset. You don't look after it. And then people who, if you drive slowly or you drive really fast, you don't think about the people around you. You're not responsible. It all boils down to this. Everything. How responsible are you for your own life? And if you're still looking for a mommy or a daddy to guide you, and you're in your 30s or 40s, you're an idiot. You really are. There's no mommy or daddy in your 30s and 40s to help hold your hand and take you forward. No one's going to come and save you. Start saving yourself. Or else get out of the way, because the rest of us have shit to do. Anyway, I've got that off my chest. Because, you meet a lot of people and they complain. People in this country love to complain. Oh, South Africa, oh, the economy, oh, it's a Ramaphosa.
Based on what? Yeah, like, without what you, really thinking things
what
through.
What are you doing? Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
I'm complaining.
That doesn't help. That's not good enough. I got a really interesting email. I'll talk about this just now. Someone emailed me yesterday, one of our listeners, and said she just found Lindsay. She found this really interesting article about what they're doing in Paris.
Oh?
You know how we talk about how people, pee on the side of the road. And a lot of European cities, I've got to say, smell of piss. They really do. Oof. No, they do. Because people just urinate.
Pay to use the toilet.
Yeah, but people pee in the street as a result of having to pay to use the toilet. So the streets stink in a lot of these countries and a lot of these cities.
Well, especially in the hot months, yeah.
You had that waft of urine coming past you. Even in like a smart place. Where was it? It was in Lisbon, I think. Well, Lisbon's not that smart. But it was, there was this one. I turned a corner and I walked up some stairs and it was like, whoa, a lot of people pissed here last night. So Paris has come up with this interesting new way of dealing with that. So we'll talk about that in a little while. So thanks for the email, Lindsay. Ben wants to talk about The Bachelor Australia, because, of course, The Bachelor is coming to South Africa soon.
Uh-huh.
So we've got to figure out. Does anybody know whether they have started auditioning people?
Yeah. Well,
they have.
They started auditioning the ladies.
Opened, yeah.
Oh, yes?
They did a few open casting situations around the country in Cape Town and Joburg.
You mean Mops Moponyane hasn't applied for this job as well? I mean, he's doing everything. I mean, he's not going to be The Bachelor as well.
Well, they obviously asked him, and he would. That would be the first thing. The entire production meeting was, how can we lure him in?
Yeah.
Oh, guys.
I like Mike's. But he is doing everything.
Oh, yeah, of course. They're keeping that. I think they'll reveal it probably next year because the show premieres on Valentine's Day next year.
And of course, because this is South Africa, it's going to be a racial thing. You know what I mean.
Oh.
It's going to be a black bachelor and a white girl, or it's going to be a white bachelor and a black girl. You know, people think this stuff. They sit in a board meeting and they don't let humans just fall in love or pretend to fall in love on a TV show because that's what it is. I mean, it's a dumb... Well, look, I love The Bachelor because I've watched a couple of episodes and I think it's awesome. But it's dumb people, right? And they, you know, he kisses her and then he gives her the rose and she feels special for a day. Then he, like, mercilessly dumps her in two episodes' time. And it's just incredible seeing how, like, gullible people are when you get them on their emotions. Anyway, so I can't wait for this show. But let's just... for a moment, suspend disbelief, and let's say they don't choose people demographically. So they don't go, oh, we haven't got an Indian woman. Ooh, or we haven't got a colored woman. Maybe Indian girls don't want to enter because they don't like a white dude or whatever. Let people's personal preferences show.
Well, I'll be offended if there isn't an Indian guy as a bachelor. I mean, come on.
All right.
It's 2018. Get with it.
Why? What's there a thing about Indian guys?
Yeah, because always a white or a black guy, Gareth. When the Indian guy is going to get a chance?
See, you should be producing this show.
Every time I watch rugby, where's the Indian captain?
Is that what your thought?
And really, Indian people have been working very hard for the last 100 years.
Been there forever.
To make sure that we take notice of them. They've really had like lots more Indians so that we'd all go, oh, shit, you guys are here.
And the only time an Indian eventually got like into the spotlight, it was the wrong kind of Indian. It wasn't even like a nice one.
Yeah, well, I'm curious. I love this. I can't wait for The Bachelor in South Africa, and I'm going to watch every goddamned episode.
I like to think that Indian people are still very much conservative, and I wouldn't be surprised if they don't participate in this nonsense.
Nonsense.
Yeah, but no, that's not the issue here.
It's nonsense.
No, the demanding public don't care about that kind of stuff. It's all about having the presence. So whether they want to or not, they need to be there. It's not their choice.
Do you think this is? Because usually in The American Bachelor, which I've watched, they always have this like really, really good-looking male model who obviously spends like 90% of his time in the gym. He doesn't have a real job. Do you think that'll work here, or do you think we want like a blesser? Someone who's not necessarily attractive, probably got a like shiny bald head and he's got tenders.
See,
in South Africa, a blesser would do. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think it's really about feelings. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a pessimist here.
I'm not saying one is better than the other. Whether you are interested in someone just because they look really good, or you're interested in someone because they've got a big bank balance, or you're interested in someone because they're very powerful, it's all the same thing, right?
Isn't it sad how we speak about the blesser like it's an actual genre of human
being? It's a genre of person.
They're among us, Ben.
Like when you're filling out a home affairs form.
Yes.
Blesser, I'll tick that box there.
Yes.
That's your thing.
I'm
no Dr. Phil here, but I really try to wonder why certain things just become these big hits in culture. The Bachelor has been going on for years, season after season, and I often wonder what it is that keeps it going, what it is that has resonated, and I think it's the fantasy of it all.
Yeah.
This, you know...
That's a good point.
A bachelor will be a farmer from the Midwest in America, and...
We've got that. We've already had Bursuka Pro.
But that's why, in my head, I think it will be this gorgeous person who lives in Cape Town and drives a convertible, and somehow in your mind you'll think, of course I'll just slot into your life and we'll drive into the sunset in Camps Bay.
They love the fantasy, man. They
it's
want,
not going they, to be an accountant,
you know what it is,
sitting here debating and worrying about HR on Monday morning and stuck in traffic.
No, it can't be a regular person. Yeah. It has to be like slightly better than that so that people can live out their fantasies, because everybody wants someone to save them. That's the reality. They want someone to swoop in.
Oh, yeah, because it's the whole
Prince
night.
Charming.
We want equality and women's rights and stuff. We also want the knight in shining armor who does everything.
But you get the idiot in tinfoil.
That's entertainment. Yeah, it is.
The idiot in tinfoils.
It's never really a fantasy, though, is it? I mean, from a distance, maybe. But when you're... Yeah.
What do you mean?
Nothing is ever a fantasy.
Especially not now, yeah.
Yeah, no, from a distance, it'll look all shiny and nice.
Of course.
But, you know.
No, you know when those cameras get switched off, they probably don't even talk to each other. But that's fine. We don't have to be part of that. That's reality TV. That's a whole different thing.
Every couple of months after a Bachelor season has wrapped in the States,
they always track
they
them
break
down,
up
right?
and
yeah.
something has
but they,
happened.
But they go and they do a post-mortem, and they're like, oh, why aren't you guys together anymore? Then you hear the really good stories.
Yeah, the couples who stay will stay for a reality show that they've bagged together.
You know what's
or
interesting is
a
like,
business.
I think the people who watch The Bachelor are very different to the people who watch the post-mortem shows. The ones where it all falls apart. I don't think they're the same people.
I would agree with that.
I think the people who watch The Bachelor are the ones who want the fantasy. And the ones who watch those shows where you see them fight and argue and break up. Yeah. Those are people who want reality.
I think most people who watch The Bachelor can't get off the couch to avoid watching the post-mortem. They're gluttons for whatever's on their screen.
Yeah, all right. Hey, listen, let's get into the five things you need to know today. We've pretty much looked at a couple of things in the news already, but 50 people. Let's give credit where it's due. Becky Cele, thank you. He's arrested 50 people already this year for cash heists. And remember, he's only really been in the job and been sorting things out very recently. So he's busy going after these cash and transit heist gangsters, and he's busy starting to make arrests. He actually just arrested 5 South African police members and announced this to Parliament on Wednesday, so that's really good news. 52 is the total number of those in custody in connection with cash and transit heists. Ellis says that the policemen that were nabbed in the past 24 hours, and he announced to Parliament that they are now in prison, well, in jail anyway, waiting for trial. The minister has frankly admitted to MPs that the recent spate of cash and transit heists had police on the run. He said in May and June we were really, really bad. These guys were messing us up. So he admits there was a big problem. You remember those videos that everybody was sending around of those terrible cash and transit heists and the violence and the yep. guns and everything mm. else. He said that there are almost 52 of them that are in our hands now, from number 1, 2, 3, 4 in the top 20. So he's got some of the top cash and transit kingpins, if you believe him. He says it's unclear whether this includes the 5 SAPS members he says were arrested on Tuesday, but it's somewhere around 50. He then further shocked police committee members by revealing that these include a kingpin believed to be linked to 23 cash heists who was out on bail. How he got bail when he was arrested for the cash heist, and not just that cash heist. There was a shootout when he was arrested and he got bail in 2016. And Gale says he can't understand how that happened. So at least some people are taking their jobs seriously. And I've always liked this guy, even though he got into huge shit for saying shoot to kill and all that other stuff. He gets stuff done. And
his stomach and chest out.
But at least his shoot to kill was for criminals, not individual people.
Yeah, not, citizens.
Yeah.
SA Express to operate limited service after being grounded. Remember, they grounded the whole SA Express thing. Those desks were closed at the airport. You couldn't get on an SA Express flight, and everybody else had to pick up the slack. Well, they might be ready to take to the sky next week. Operations will be limited, though. 2 routes will initially be flown, using only 9 of the airline's 22 aircraft. The rest are still grounded. On Wednesday, Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan said he has hopes to have a plan within the next 2 months as to how to merge the struggling airline with the equally ailing national carrier SAA and low-cost airline Mango. So they're looking at it. Finally, some realities kicked in, and they're going, ooh, shit, we've got a problem here. These 3, Mango, SA Express, and SAA, are bleeding money, and they now need to be held to account. I mean, if you look at Air Link and how well they're doing, because they fall outside of that ambit, that tells you that there is plenty of money to be made if you run this thing properly. If you run it like an idiot. And again, there's another person we've got to catch up with, Dudumieni, at some point, who's also just living a life as if she's done nothing wrong. If you run it properly, it can make a ton of money. Anyway, so that's good news for SA Express if they do get back out of the shithole. And then ProKid apparently died due to a rare cause of bleeding in the gastrointestinal tract. The late rapper's family confirmed in a statement that they received post-mortem results on Tuesday, and those results revealed 37-year-old Mkize suffered from hemosuccous pancreaticus. which is bleeding in the pancreas, pancreatic duct, or structures near the pancreas, such as the splenic artery that bleed into the pancreatic duct. I mean, that was kind of sudden, right? Took everybody by surprise.
Yeah, the seizure, the alleged drug use.
Tell you what, there are a lot of people who are unaware of their physical problems, their physical ailments. They don't go and get checkups. They don't prioritize their health. They feel a little bit shitty, and we all do this. We're all responsible for ourselves. But we can't help it. You get sick, you go, I'll just take it easy for 2 days and see if it gets better. Instead of going straight to the doctor.
And then they become the car on the side of the road, Gareth.
Yep. That's right. Ooh. Yeah, because you're not being maintained. Right, Ben. Spot on. Yeah. He is survived by his mother, that's Prokit, is survived by his mother, Figile, his father, Zwelakhe, his wife, Ayanda, and young daughter, Nonkayesi, who he, of course, passed away last Wednesday after allegedly complaining of a stomach ache. So please, if you feel a stomach ache, go to the doctor. Get yourself looked out for. Looked after. Get the doctor to check you out. The inquiry into the Gupta's early naturalization is to be conducted in September. I mean, is this really necessary? I suppose we've got to find out whether Malusi Gigaba fast-tracked them because he's still in government. And he's also a crook. We know that. He's the one who enabled state capture.
Gareth, we all know people from various countries in this continent who will never get... You say home affairs, they're breaking into a cold sweat and vomit. Yeah, so, of course, these guys were fast-tracked because you don't get this kind of stuff.
That's true.
It's a simple... Look at the calendar. We don't need a commissioner inquiry. Stop being a dick. This skullduggery afoot.
I'm afraid that's true. We've got to figure this out. I mean, we've got to get to the bottom of it. So I wish it was a little bit faster and we could actually do something about it. Because even if we discover that the Guptas did get fast-tracked, it would be nice to know that there's going to be someone held responsible. Again, who's responsible? So if it's Malusi... Then he must go to jail.
Shiny guy in the suit.
Yeah, he must go to jail. Parliament set aside 4 days next month to conduct. They're going to take 4 days. I mean, I promise you, Ben, Sia, Nolo, and I could do this in an afternoon. Nolo, we could figure this one out, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, one afternoon. Fucking 4 days in Parliament. Anyway, so there's some small progress being made.
Look, I'm all for it being 4 days if it's damning for those in responsible for this. Because it takes 4 days to round everyone up who's been dodgy. Great. Take five. As long as there'll be a verdict to the end where people are rounded up.
The Hawks have reached out to Interpol to help with Steinhoff and their investigation into Steinhoff. In the latest news, the retail giant's share price collapsed. Well, obviously that was last year. After the abrupt resignation of the CEO, Marcus Huerstein, December 2017. But what the latest is that the Hawks have decided they're going to ask Interpol to help them get access to police investigations relating to Steinhoff that are underway in Germany and the Netherlands. So they'll be able to find out what the Germans and the Dutch know and what Interpol knows in order to put their investigation together. All right, so let's see what happens there. Because obviously a lot of shareholders, a lot of people who were involved with Steinhoff who've lost massive amounts of money. Of course, not nearly as bad as Life Estimeni or Marikana because people actually died. But in this case, huge amounts of South Africa's stock exchange value wiped away by this irresponsible Marcus Huerstein and one or two other crooked people in the Steinhoff board. Because that's what they say happened. There was off-balance sheet stuff, there was on-balance sheet stuff, but by no means should we equate this with government pissing away money, because this is a private company, and if you invest with them, you take a risk. In this case, you were risking your money with crooks. Of course, people must be held responsible, but I hate the way that so many people in the media go, well, Steinhoff is bad, so government's just as bad. No, the one is using public money to do really bad things, like move mental patients to places where they're going to die. The other one's just crooking the books. And, of course, there are consequences for both, but the one should be a lot more devastating than the other. Let's get to Ben. Let's see what's going on in the sport. Just a quick update on Bitcoin, $6,326. Ethereum, $284. Cheap as chips. Ben, what's in the headlines?
Another English sports star can't behave. Otis Gibson is using the old World Cup chestnuts to make excuses again. And more players are committing to the Lions, which is really good. You know, Ben Stokes obviously cleared of just being a social fighter, I guess. Now Danny Cipriani also just can't behave. What? He was in Jersey with his team. They were on a pre-season kind of tour, and he was arrested for assaulting a police officer, resisting arrest, larceny, common assault.
These guys are making more noise off the field than they are on.
Yeah, so this dude, I mean, where can we start with his biggest achievements in life? He dated Kelly Brook. I think that was it. Look, he's a talented rugby player. He came out on the recent tour of SA where he played flat. He played bloody well. He was instrumental in the English's win over the Boks at Newlands. And many think that he was always that guy, if they could just guide him in the right place, he could be this mercurial talent who could do wonders for his country. Yeah, but he's also a bit of a dipshit, though. I don't care who you are or what you are, but if you do this kind of stuff and you seek this kind of attention, you're ultimately going to crash and burn. And, this guy's going to probably end up marrying, like, a 50-year-old glamour model at some stage. And that's going to be end of his life.
Okay.
So, look, you get what you choose in life, I guess.
Sure.
He's an adult, and he chose to behave like this. But it does kind of It does. That's from Inside the Nightclub that made Danny into a fighter.
Right.
It does give, what's his name, the Eddie Jones, a bit of a sort of solution, really, because he was in the selection mix with a bunch of other fly halves, but now that he's doing this kind of stuff, well, you can't pick him. So he's going to have, like, less worry going into the World Cup, I guess. So, I mean, Eddie Jones probably reads this and goes, oh, well, not a bad thing. Atletico Madrid took on Real Madrid last night in the UEFA Super Cup. So what that means is that the Champions League winners and the UEFA Thursday Cup winners, they come together and they play a match. It's really, really incredible match. Of course, Real Madrid don't have Ronaldo anymore, so they lost 4-2. It was 2-2 after regulation play, and then Atletico, through Saul and Koku, they've scored two more goals. So they get the early part of the season bragging rights winning the Super Cup, which is a really big deal because, let's be honest, you're playing against the Champions League winner, so it's like the best team, basically. Vitz, they won again in the PSL. They beat Kaizer Chiefs, then they beat Orlando Pirates away, so two impressive results for them. Of course, they had that dreadful season last year. When they looked at the fixture list this year, they thought, well, shit, our start's quite tough. But there they go. They are, look, it's an own goal, so maybe not too much credit goes to them, but a win is a win, as they say in every classic. So they go top of the log. They have, of course, played three matches. So they're 9 points. Early days, of course. Bloom Celtic are on 6. Mamelodi Sundowns are on 4. With a whole host of other teams. Now, the Proteas, you might say it's been an okay year. They beat the Aussies, although the Aussies kind of beat themselves when they came here. Outside of that, well, weren't that great against India, were they? And this tour of Sri Lanka, well, the test match was an absolute disaster. The ODIs, of course, they won that series, but then they lost the last two and the T20. And it just looked like embarrassing how they went about that. So Otis Gibson was saying, well, you know, the goal's always been the 2019 World Cup. Now, we hear this in rugby, we hear this in cricket. Just win the matches you're trying to play. I mean, it's not asking too much here. If you say, well, we're focusing on Christmas next year, so you're not going to get any presents until now. You have a very unhappy child, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is what we feel like as the as a sporting public.
Yeah, kids get very upset when they don't get the presents.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Look, I'm not going to be here, but I mean, next Christmas, then you'll get a bike. Bullshit, because we all know that World Cups are terrible things to the Proteas. So basically, you're focusing on something that always ends in a failure. And then we must take that as like the sort of excuse. You've got to get into a habit of winning, a culture of winning. Winning becomes a habit. Once you have that, you then get to win more and more and more. If you're setting your sights on winning at some other time, that's like a deadbeat dad saying, well, when you get into high school, I'll support you. Bullshit. Because he doesn't know how to support the person. So, yeah. That's Otis's take. Of course, Dale Benkenstein's take was that, well, he doesn't know what he's doing. So at least Otis might know what he's doing. I don't know. I'm just not overly enthused by all this. But I tell you where winning is a habit is with the All Blacks. Of course, that's what they do. They don't talk about World Cups. They just talk about winning World Cups after they've won them. And, every single match they try to win. New Zealand are playing Australia this weekend. Now, this is, well, they got a great record against every country in the world. Seriously, every single country that has an oval ball in backyards, these guys wallop. So their overall test record, 161 tests against Australia, 113 have been wins.
Oh.
43 losses and 7 draws. Now, look, there have been some fantastic Aussie sides in, like, the 90s and then when Gregan and Eels played together. But otherwise, yeah, it's just one-way traffic. So it's Saturday, 12:05 South African time. This will be the first match of the Rugby Championship. The Australians, basically, they'll just look around the squad and see who isn't serving a DUI or some sort of other domestic violence case, and they'll put together 15 chaps. New Zealand, well, they've got Ben Smith playing fullback. Waisaki Noholo will be on the wing. Jack Goodhue and Ryan Crotty will be your centre pairing, which is surprising, but these guys can select probably five or six players in every single position, and it will hold, you know, justice to them. Rico Ioane.
Who's that?
Rico Ioane and Bowden Barrett. Now, the reason I'm reading this entire backline out is because, can you imagine, even with Jack Goodhue, who obviously hasn't set the world alight in an international sense just yet.
Never heard of him, yeah.
But imagine just running out and, you know, this is your backline. You know you're going to win. It's just as simple as that. Add to that, you've got the Franks, Owen Franks, Cody Taylor and Joe Moody creating an incredible platform in the front row. You've got Brody Retallick and Sam Whitelock, Whitelock's 100th test. And then you got Liam Squire, Sam Kane, and Kieran Reid. I mean, I don't see a team beating that this year.
Nah.
I know Sia doesn't. I know you don't, Gareth.
No, certainly, Ben, you know I'm the expert.
They've got a bench with guys like Artie Sevier coming on. You've got guys like Darren McKenzie, TJ sure. Parinara.
Yes, of course, TJ, yeah.
Like I tell Anthony every year, if you want a 15% return on investment, put R1 million down on the All Blacks winning the Rugby Championship. You'll get a 15% return on investment in October.
Huh.
Get that from government bonds?
There we go. No, that's
very good. Is Bitcoin going to give you that?
No, and that's a guarantee.
Wow.
Definitely.
Very nice, Ben.
Yeah.
You put it so simply. You make it easy for us.
Yeah, there is other sport, I'm sure. The Lions. So they've got, well, you know, this whole exodus. I mean, look, if I was in my 20s and someone asked me to go Jordan France with lots of money, I'd do it. But the Lions are holding firm, and a lot of guys have recommitted to the Lions. So next year, Lions fans, you will still see Elton Junchies, Lionel Mapu, Warren Whiteley, Malcolm Marks, Ross Crenier, Apiwa Junchie, Kyle Brink, Marvin Ori, Kortnar Skosan, Dylan Smith, Quacha Smith, Andrews Kassir, Rowan Combrick, and Dylan Smith. These are all guys you'll see again next year.
Good.
Which is a really good thing. So obviously the team dynamic is right there, and winning has become a habit for them. See, there's always an underlying theme here, Otis. And it's a big good thing. So the Lions, well, they're never going to win Super Rugby because New Zealand teams play in it. But it's always nice to get to the final and just be the best in SA. How about that? Be the best that you can be and enjoy that. And that is your sport for today. Tomorrow is Friday. Tomorrow you'll get fixtures and other interesting things.
Excellent. Thank you, Ben. It's time for Said by Sia. This is where we get inspired. Sia, do it for us.
Well, one of the things that I always try to spread and remind us all of is that we can all do our little bit to make some change in some way. And I think this story this morning particularly is a great example of that. A 60-year-old woman in Edenvale by the name of Agnes Zikwa has recently just proved exactly what I discussed by donating her third wheelchair to an organization called Little Eden Society. So Agnes is in her 60s and she works in Edenvale as a domestic worker, and she made her donation a few days ago on August the 2nd after she collected 485 kilograms of plastic bottle tops. Do you guys know of that concept?
Mm-mm.
When people collect bottle tops or bread tags and they're able to swap that out and recycle it, and they're able to swap that out for a wheelchair. So nice. Agnes has just simply been doing this for a couple of years. So to some people, she says, the bottle tops may look like rubbish, but I see them as a way to help others. So this idea all started in 2015 when Agnes and her employer, her name is Nolene, collected 300 kgs of bottle tops.
Wow.
And they were then able to donate two wheelchairs. And Agnes says, I enjoy helping those in need or those who can't help themselves. And she says that simple concept has just led to her being able to bring happiness to so many people. So just over the period of 3 years, she's been able to do this over and over again, and has now been able to donate her third wheelchair to this organization. And I think prime example. You don't have to wear superhero tights and run around with a cape to make a true difference. This lady, just going around her daily life, was able to collect bottle tops wherever she saw them laying around. At one point, she even visited landfills just to go the extra mile. But look at this. Three people from this society called Little Eden are now benefiting from Agnes's kindness, because now they have wheelchairs. I think it's awesome. So kudos to you, Mum Agnes. And that's your Said by Sia for
Thank
this
you,
morning.
Sia. Very good. Now, I'm not the best at being inspirational, but I can help you with some schadenfreude. So we have
Go
been
ahead.
Mocking the government for their 2030 deadline to sort out shitting. You know, that we don't want pit toilets by 2030. This is what governments ambitiously said they'll be able to do. It's small progress, but at least they've put a deadline in place. It's 12 years for them to eradicate pit toilets. But it's not just us. San Francisco, which is in the heart of the tech belt in America, right? San Francisco, the most expensive property prices in America. They have just launched a poop patrol.
Uh-oh.
Yes, a city where filthy sidewalks are many residents' number one complaints because homeless people just shit in the streets there. And they've launched a poop patrol. They'll begin their shifts in the afternoon as the city starts losing its sheen from overnight cleaning. The poop patrol's mission is to spot and clean piles of feces before anybody complains about them. "We're trying to be proactive," explained Public Works Director Mohamed Nuru. "We're actually out there looking for it." Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there a punishment for doing the said shitting, though?
No. Okay, there are about 65 calls regarding sidewalk shitting every day, and that's more than 2,427 calls on the stinky subject that were made in the same time period last year. The poop patrol idea sprung from conversations between this guy, Mohamed Nuru, and the mayor, a guy called London Breed, who both have expressed disgust at the filthy conditions of the sidewalks. So nobody likes to talk about this stuff, but homeless people in San Francisco just... You know, they just poo wherever they poo, and it becomes someone else's problem. There are 22 pit stop toilets around the city, only 22, but many of them are open until only late afternoon or evening. So there are few options for homeless people. I mean, this is just insane. Like, now we're not even going to make you responsible for where you take a dump.
Mm.
It's just crazy, right? At least San Francisco have the same low-level problems that we do occasionally. And just to make you feel better that it's not only South Africa where we have problems around lavatories. As awful as that subject is to some people, it's so really, it's so important, and it's so basic, and it's so real to other people.
No,
you got to think about this stuff, Sia. If you don't, who will? So the mayor of San Fran has launched a poop patrol. Just think about that one for a little bit. All right, we're going to take care of you, look after things, give you some news. We've also got the Burning Platform coming up in a little while. Ivo Fechter will be joining us on the line. He will be Skyping in from Neisner, so we'll be speaking to him next.
CliffCentral.com.